Welcome to New England Lacrosse Journal's Chasing the Goal podcast, the podcast for lacrosse athletes and their supporters to help further their development and navigate their way throughout their lacrosse careers. Be sure to subscribe to the podcast on Apple Podcasts, Google Play Music, Spotify, TuneIn, Stitcher, and other platforms. The website is laxjournal.com. On Twitter, at NELaxJournal. Instagram, at New England Lacrosse Journal. On Facebook, at Lax Journal. And you can email the show, chasingthegoal@laxjournal.com.
Welcome to New England Lacrosse Journal's Chasing the Goal podcast. I'm your host, Kyle Devitt. Alongside me, the legend, Mr. Jack Piattelli. Jack, how we doing?
Fantastic. It's always a pleasure. I look forward to coming in the studio. Not only do I love this studio, it's just a pleasure sitting next to you.
That's so nice. Are you feeling all right?
Yeah? Yeah, it seems like we're getting closer every week. I don't know if you're getting closer to me or I'm getting closer to you. We have to draw the line, I think
we all just need to get closer to our listeners. And in an effort to do that, our guest today, Mr. Casey Donofo, the head coach at Tufts University. What do you know about Mr. Donofo?
Well, I know he's a great young coach in the game, and he loves to play a fast game. I saw them play Springfield 2 years ago at Tufts, and it was one of the most prolific offensive showings I've seen in a first half in my entire career. He was a multi-sport athlete, actually played football, basketball, and lacrosse at Tufts. And I'd like to ask him some questions about how important it is to be a multi-sport athlete.
I didn't know he played hoop. That's awesome. I'm excited to grill him on that, because there is a kind of an underground coach basketball league that goes on that I got to dabble in when I was coaching a little bit. And believe it or not, got a little game.
I can't see you playing basketball.
I know you can't, but I got to tell you, I got moves.
It's tough enough watching you play lacrosse.
Oh, wow. That's brutal.
I'm just kidding.
Wow.
I'm just kidding. You scored 2 goals against Springfield your whole career.
My whole career. That's right. In 3 games against them, 2 goals. I'm actually just really looking forward to bringing up last year's game that Tufts played against Dartmouth. That I had a very unique experience being the only person in the audience to watch. And, I'm excited to tell him that I heard everything he said in the huddle. And I want to see his reaction to that when I tell him.
Looking forward to it.
Yeah, absolutely. So without any further ado, here he is, the Tufts head coach, Casey Donofo. Welcome to the podcast, Tufts head coach, Casey Donofo. Casey, how are you doing?
I'm doing great. Always better to talking to you guys. Always happy to talk shop. Nothing better than sitting down with guys that love lacrosse and talking lacrosse.
Yeah, sorry, that was a first name basis I just went with there, but that's fine.
Oh no,
it's, people don't need to know.
On a first name basis, Kyle, no doubt.
Yay, that's good. It's like the only coach that'll say that to me. I guess I'll start out. You're not just the head coach at Tufts; you're also an alum. How does that impact you personally and as a coach, like knowing you having that history with the school that you're at?
Well, I think everything you do becomes personal, and you're just that much more invested, not just in your team, but in the program and in the university. So you're trying to have a positive impact on these guys because you know what they can become. You have a great responsibility to make the program better than when you found it, which is a pretty high bar, that Coach Daly and his crew set, but that's exciting. And then, again, you think about as best you can, and which is always tough at universities, how can we make a positive impact on the university? And I think it gives me a really good perspective on the history of the program, where we've been, and ideally, hopefully where we're going as well.
Coach, obviously it's been very challenging times for the lacrosse community the last couple of years. Must be very exciting not only to be able to coach this fall, but to have your players on campus and have them participate in a fall season.
It's great. I think if nothing else, the last 2 years have given us some perspective, both in terms of you know, what certainly we're facing adversity as coaches and as lacrosse student athletes. But I think it's also given us perspective in terms of, you know, how lucky we are that, you know, if, you know, having to wear a mask during lacrosse practice is the biggest adversity that you're going to face on a day-to-day basis, then you got it pretty good. You know, I think last year's team being able to play when the class of 2020 had their season cut short, that gave us some, you know, a fair amount of gratitude and appreciation for what we were able to do, even though it was limited compared to normal years. And, you know, it also allowed us to, you know, I think become better coaches. You know, some of the stuff that we were forced into during COVID times when we were 6 feet and groups of 10 and masks on, you know, we've implemented some of that stuff and what we do now that we have very few restrictions out on the field. And I think, you know, it more than anything else, it really helped us to figure out what was important to our program. I think we had a really good idea of that, but I think some of the setbacks that we had last year, some of the limitations that we had last year in terms of team meetings, culture things, extreme ownership, you know, a lot of those things that we knew were important were really cemented after last year when we were limited in terms of what we can do, what we could do. So, you know, there certainly were a lot of challenges for sure, but I think that we're coming out of the other side of this stronger and more appreciative of the opportunities that we have.
Now, for a number of our listeners, NESCAC conference does not allow lacrosse programs to have a fall season. Do you see that changing going forward, or is just this just one exception due to the COVID protocols?
It's a great question. I wish I could give you a definitive. You know, it's I think it's really complicated because now it becomes, this isn't just lacrosse, right? This is going to be everything the NESCAC does is going to be league wide. So it's not just about how lacrosse feels about it; it's how all the other spring sports feel about it. You know, we're starting practice earlier this year. We're going to start on Feb 1 instead of Feb 15. So, and the winter sports are going to start earlier, 2 weeks earlier as well. So now you've got limited infrastructure at these places in terms of off-season locker rooms, off-season spaces. You have limited training rooms. You have coaches at each institution that have different off-season responsibilities. And so now there's going to be a lot of questions about, you know, is it better for the kids? I couldn't agree more that it is better for the kids. It gives them structure. It allows them interactions. It keeps them accountable. It lets us put eyes on them multiple times a week, particularly the young guys who are adjusting to these brand new environments. I think it's, from a mental health perspective, more important. From a physical health perspective, I think it's a huge advantage for these guys. You know, it's definitely more challenging for the multi-sport athletes, but you know, that's, you're talking about a minority, you know, probably 2, 3, 4 kids at each institution at most. So I think from a student athlete perspective, it makes a ton of sense, but you know, from a university infrastructure standpoint, you know, our school is going to be able to, you know, make this change full time while also being able to make accommodations that are going to, you know, be sustainable at each one of these places. And I don't know the answer to that. So thankfully for me, this decision is way above my pay grade.
And what is the reasoning for not allowing in years past the NESCAC schools to have a fall program?
You know, in terms of the verbatim language and discussions, I have to, you know, plead ignorance on that one. You know, sort of what the trickle down understanding is among coaches is that, you know, the universities want students at NESCAC schools to have a true college experience and not be overburdened by their sports. You know, I think that's outdated. You know, I think probably when that decision was made in the 1970s, 1980s, 1990s, whatever it was, you know, the off season wasn't taken as seriously and wasn't structured as much. And you had coaches, you know, like Coach Daly coached football and lacrosse. He was my football coach. You know, he was my positional coach in football. And then he coached me in the spring in lacrosse. You know, John Raba down at Wesleyan coached football. George McCormick was the defensive coordinator for the Williams football team for a long time. And there's, you know, more and more and more, you know, guys like that. you know, who have been around and who have done that. And that was doable. It wasn't easy, but it was doable because of the sort of the limited off season, you know, that guys participated in. But now everything is so turbocharged in terms of what these student athletes want in the off season. You know, and that's so different even in the last 10 or 15 years than it was, you know, back in the day when I was playing multiple sports in college that, you know, it's, I think the league has to figure out, you know, okay, everything that's coming out is positive. Kids are doing better in school. There's more structure. There's more accountability. You know, now they just have to decide if this is enhancing student athlete experience and better for the university, or if they still see it as a detriment.
Coach, Tufts is well known for their up and down style of play that was developed, you know, over the last, I would say, 20 years and when you played. And now it's been taken to the Division I level with Sean Kerwin and now the recently departed Danny Murphy going to Michigan. How much do you think that has helped your program in terms of a national spotlight?
I think it's essential. You know, again, nothing makes me happier than when, you know, they interview Coach Tiffany after a game and, you know, he praises Coach Kerwin. I think that's great for our brand. You know, it's always great when, you know, whether it's Quint or Paul Carcaterra or whomever is on the broadcast and they talk about, oh, the tough style of play, you know, and now you're being mentioned on ESPN. Or I also think it's important for people to see that that style in different forms and functions can operate at the Division I level, because now high school coaches may be more inclined to do that. And they may think like, hey, my kid would really thrive in that type of style. And now Tufts becomes a school that, you know, their kid who might be a Division I caliber player, but doesn't have interest from Division I schools that play that style. Now, all of a sudden we're in that conversation. So I think that's fantastic. I think they're doing, you know, obviously a great job down at Brown of trying to, you know, recruit the types of guys that are going to thrive in that system. I think they're doing a heck of a job of it right now. I think they're going to be a problem in the Ivy League over the course of the next few years. So yeah, nothing but good things, for our brand. And we love it. And, you know, we love anytime alums or friends of the program go out and, you know, play that style and then give credit to the program and to Coach Daly and to Coach Kerwin and Coach Holm and, you know, all the other guys that came before me that are doing such a great job of implementing it at other places.
And kind of speaking of which, you last spring, you went up to Dartmouth to play them in a cross divisional game, beat them on their own turf. How meaningful was that for you as a coach and the program at the time that it was played?
Well, I think most importantly, last year we were trying to create meaningful experiences for our guys. And, you know, with the state of the league last year and teams being at, you know, 30, 40, 50% capacity of their rosters, we were just trying to play the best programs possible. And, you know, hats off to Coach Callahan and his crew and his players for not only, you know, reaching out and doing their due diligence and scheduling the game, but then, you know, playing it at their place, giving us a great opponent, really getting us ready for the NESCAC championship game, and then ultimately for NCAAs. But in terms of significance, you know, I was proud as an alum. You know, I know it gave great pride to our alumni. You know, I heard a lot of, I got a lot of emails after that game just talking about pride, because obviously when I was here and before I was here, I thought we were good, but, you know, it would have been a lot more challenging to play an Ivy League team on the road. So I think people are always, you know, pleased with the evolution and the improvements of the program. But I think, you know, again, and it's always helpful from a recruiting standpoint as well. So the fact that we could provide, you know, those visuals and that information and those results from that game, I think have helped us in terms of, you know, trying to sell our brand and, you know, talk to these guys and be like, hey, listen, we're not a Division I program, but these guys are Division I caliber players. We play a Division I style. We have, you know, a lot of the same amenities and advantages that Division I schools have. So I think it was really helpful from that perspective as well.
And specifically, just to talk about that game, I was there. I was the only person in the stands. I wrote about the experience on laxjournal.com. Was it weird to play in front of zero fans? Because I got to tell you, without any of the sound of the crowd, I had a great time. And I heard everything you said in every huddle. And that was my the most fun I think I've had at a game in the last decade or so.
Yeah, it was fun. You know, I mean, I think anytime, you know, again, anytime we can play a great opponent, you know, whether it's Dartmouth or whether it's RIT or, you know, St. John Fisher was out of this world last year. They were great. I mean, you're excited about that, you know, and we always love challenging ourselves and playing in hostile environments and different environments. You know, it was fun. You know, I think our guys could have cared less if we played in front of a crowd of one, like you, Kyle, which I thought was incredible to play in front of one guy. Or if we're playing in front of thousands of people, you know, that game, I think our guys could have cared less how many people were there. Certainly if there were a couple thousand people there, like that would have certainly enhanced the environment. But, you know, it was, I think it was cool for our guys, you know, just, and also, you know, I know this wasn't part of your question, but that whole weekend was pretty wild because we on Saturday traveled up to Bates, played Bates, drove back to Tufts. And Bates is in Lewiston, Maine. So it's about 2.5 hours north. Drove back to Tufts. Had a 10-minute scout meeting in our indoor facility because we didn't have any film on them. You know, thank goodness for Coach Toomey, who had coached against Joe Connor and Coach Callahan when he was spent time at Harvard and Colgate and BU. So he sort of gave us an idea of what we were going to see. But you know, a lot of their guys were freshmen. A lot of their guys hadn't played a ton. So we didn't know what we were going to see. And we basically told the guys that. And we're like, hey, listen, we got to be ready for anything. And then, you know, that was 10 minutes. Wake up the next morning, do our nasal swabs, our antigen tests, make sure nobody's positive. Get back on the bus, drive back up to Hanover. Our locker room was sort of a lean-to underneath the baseball stands with some tarps. And then walk out, play, have some pizza under the tarp, and then drive home. And it was a pretty wild, surreal weekend that I think when we tell people that story in 10 or 15 years, they're not gonna believe us.
Coach, and I'm sure all the players playing in that game were very excited that there was one fan, and the fan was Kyle Devitt.
I will listen, the Twitter, like responses, because I live tweeted the entire game, right? And I'm sitting there, I'm like, should I do that? Yeah, I kind of have to do something, right? Because you know, you're like in this situation that no one else is going to be in, and mm-hmm. maybe like I might never have that opportunity again. So I did like audio recordings of, listen, ride 'em, turn 'em. I will fall asleep to people yelling, ride 'em, turn 'em now. Yeah. It's like it's an amazing, like on the ride, Tufts always yells, ride 'em, turn 'em. And it's the whole bench. It's not one guy. It's not just the defense. It's literally everyone on the bench. So all the calls are actually echoed. And when you're, there is nothing to stop the echo from hitting your face because there's no one's absorbing it. It's just straight going to the seats. It reverberates back out into the forest on the other side of the field at Dartmouth. So, I mean, it's an experience I will never forget. And, you know, I don't really know how it happened. I don't remember. I think I just emailed a bunch of people and was like, hey, can I go? I've been vaccinated because I was coaching. And they were like, no. And I was like, please. And then I emailed like a couple more people and they were like, I mean, I guess. How long have you been vaccinated for? And it was for a while at that point because I had early access. And I remember they met me in the parking lot. They put a sticker on my chest and were like, you're good to go. I was like, okay. And just walked in. I'm like, there's no one here. Oh, I guess I'll just sit here. And it was surreal, man. As much fun as it was for you guys to play it, it was that much more fun for me to like experience it. You know, it's like being the last man on earth.
Yeah,
it really was. It was, yeah. and in a great way, like not in a bad way, in a great way where you're just like, this is amazing. And it was a fun game to watch, man. The final scoreline, regardless, watching every player and every part of both teams buy in and then having the ability to listen to both huddles. Cause I'm sure like you could hear the other huddle too, right? When's the last time you were able to do that? Like,
yeah, that was, I think that was strange because, you know, we had, you know, the one thing I didn't know about that field at Dartmouth, and you know, my wife played lacrosse at Dartmouth, so she tried to tell, that place has great acoustics.
Yes.
You know, like when you play at Bellow, or a lot of other net, like not a lot of other NESCAC schools have that acoustic, you know, I don't know what the right word is, but like have those acoustics. So, you know, I know if you play at Harvard Stadium, it's like that. I'm sure in the Yale Bowl, it's like that as well. But I just remember that first time out being in there and talking to the guys and be like, holy crap, like I'm super loud, right? I'm sure Kyle can hear everything that I'm saying. And then you can hear, you know, Brendan, and you can hear Joe like on the other side, and you're just like, wow, okay, like I guess we got to be a little bit more cognizant about how loud we're being, you know, when we're talking in the huddles. I'll tell you what I did appreciate though is that we never, you know, that game was on ESPN3 or plus or whatever it was, and you know, we're not a big timeout team, like we don't really call a lot of timeouts. I think our guys do a good job of figuring out, but you know, the TV timeouts, you know, we got to see our guys like four or five times as much as we normally do during the game, which I really liked. I thought that was great. I mean, I'm not going to call any more timeouts, but, you know, I was like, oh, I kind of like these TV timeouts. Yeah. This is kind of nice to see these guys so much during the course of the game.
New England Lacrosse Journal's Chasing the Goal will return after this message.
Are you serious about playing your sport in college? Do you need a flexible education that allows you to maintain your practice and competition schedules while also preparing you to succeed at the next level? You should check out the University of Nebraska High School. UNHS is accredited and offers more than 100 online courses, including NCAA-approved courses to protect your academic eligibility. Students could earn a UNHS diploma or take a single course for transfer credit. Courses are college prep, self-paced, and available 24/7, 365. Enroll anytime and take up to a year to complete a course. Visit highschool.nebraska.edu today.
Looking to keep up with all the latest news and information on New England lacrosse? New England Lacrosse Journal and LaxJournal.com are the premier resources for information and inspiration on the New England lacrosse scene. Have every issue of New England Lacrosse Journal, the magazine, delivered to your home or office. And don't forget to stay in the game every day with a digital subscription to LaxJournal.com to receive daily digital lacrosse coverage on club lacrosse, college commits, prep and high school, Division I, II, and III colleges, showcases, rankings, and much more. Get in the game and behind the scenes now by logging on to LaxJournal.com. Just click on the subscribe button and start the subscription that is right for you today. New England Lacrosse Journal is a Siemens Media publication. Siemens Media. Inspiring. Informative. Insightful.
Now, Coach, you were a three-sport athlete at Tufts, which is very impressive. You don't see too many athletes going to any school at any level playing more than two sports today. The fact that you played three, and you were the only three-sport athlete. You threw a touchdown pass, you scored a goal in lacrosse, and you made a field goal in basketball. How important it is for you and your program to recruit multi-sport athletes, and are your multi-sport athletes, do they tend to be your better lacrosse players?
Well, I think that it's very important. I mean, again, like, you know, we can't exclusively recruit multi-sport guys just because that's, you know, not necessarily where the sport is trending. But you know, I love the multi-sport guys just because they bring a different perspective. They bring more background knowledge. If you recruit a basketball guy, it's easy to teach a basketball guy how to play two-man.
Sure.
It's easy to teach a basketball guy how to rotate defensively. It's easy to teach a basketball guy how to, you know, turn guys back and, you know, full court press or 10-man or whatever it is, because that's basically basketball, right? And, you know, it's the same thing. Like, you recruit hockey guys, like, you know, those guys are going to be animals off the wings. You know, they're going to be great in tight spaces, you know, getting the ball out of there. You know, football guys are going to have that inherent discipline and toughness out of them. You know, obviously Mac Bradle is, you know, one of the best players in the country. He's a good golfer. So, you know, he has a short memory. You know, he doesn't let one bad tee shot or one bad play get him down. You know, again, I think it's so important for guys to play other sports. One, because you're going to learn other things. And two, because you're training your body to do so many different things. And something that we've seen, you know, knock on wood, is that you would think that our multi-sport guys are going to be a little bit more injury prone, but I think because they're doing different things in the off season, because they're, you know, making different movements and testing their body and training their body for different types of impacts, we don't see those guys get, you know, suffering major injuries, you know, during lacrosse season. Whereas, you know, guys who are just playing lacrosse, and now you make one movement that's slightly different than what you've been training, your body's not used to that. You're probably more likely to sustain a serious injury if you're doing something that's outside of the lacrosse norm, whereas we find our multi-sport guys, that doesn't really happen to them. You know, I think there's that part of it. I think there's the compete level from guys. You know, I know Coach Berkman at Salisbury talks about this all the time, but you know, I think it's so important to realize, you know, if you're not playing a sport in the off season, you know, you're not going to be able to get 2 hours of hard training competition every day and then games, you know, every weekend or twice a week. You're not going to be able to replicate that if you're not playing. And so if you're doing that in the off season, if you're getting all those extra practices and all those extra games, like, that's going to make you a better competitor. That's going to make you a better athlete. And so I think there's no replacement for that, you know, for those guys. And then I think just being on a different team teaches you how to be a different type of teammate. You know, like when I was here, I was the quarterback on the football team. So you have that perspective of being the leader and being the man and being the person that gets all that attention, you know. And then I played hoops, and I was literally the last guy on the bench on the hoops team. And my job every day in practice was with this guy, Reggie Stovall, who was NESCAC player of the year, 6'5", muscular, real physical. And my job every day in practice was to be a pain in his ass, elbow him, push him, you know, talk trash, you know, really be physical with him. And, you know, ultimately that made him a better player. And that was just a different role as a teammate for me. And then by the time I got to lacrosse season, I have those two experiences. And then I think I'm a better lacrosse teammate as well. So I know that's a really long-winded answer, but, you know, I would say, you know, sort of distilled, it's important for guys because it's going to make them better players, but it's also going to make them better teammates if they're multi-sport guys.
So you must be first picked in the coaches games at recruiting tournaments.
I would say, you know, again, I can't, you know, Mike Silippo is going to take it, you know, personally, if he says he doesn't get picked before me. You know, I think Silips is a pretty good player. I know Natalin's a great player. I know Chamati's a good player. You know, I think I have, you know, if I'm a lottery pick, I feel pretty good about that.
Yeah. I know GB is going to be upset you didn't mention him too, but that's fine.
Well, you know, again, listen, and listen, Coach Burnett is an excellent athlete. You know, he and I and Coach Moreland played a ton of pickleball this past winter.
Oh, yeah.
But, you know, again, like, it's those knees aren't what they used to be. You know, when he's down on the post, I think I can make him uncomfortable down there. So, you know, maybe I'll have to get over to Harvard one of these days and play a little 3-on-3. See where he's at.
Same. When I coached them at St. A's, it was not fun. If he wasn't on your team, you were getting the business.
No doubt.
Yeah.
No doubt.
So the NESCAC is, as all of our listeners know, and you know, it's a very desirable destination for players, not only from this area, but across the country. You guys are kind of competing, you know, different coaches in the NESCAC are competing for similar guys. How tough is it to have to cap your recruiting class? And does the time constraint change with recruiting juniors to seniors to getting guys maybe that are coming off of possibly D1 commitments?
It's a great question. I think one of the more challenging parts and also one of the more exciting parts is that, you know, since I've been here, every class and every recruiting process has been different. You know, the class of 18, now our current seniors, that was my first recruiting class. And so it's your first class. You're starting to figure out how you want to recruit your guys and, you know, build your program, you know. And then obviously, you know, after that, you know, now all of a sudden you can't recruit freshmen, you can't recruit sophomores, then, you know, COVID happens. And then all of a sudden the transfer portal becomes a player in all of this. And then we go test optional as all the other NESCACs do. So I think every year is going to bring its own challenges. I think we've gotten better about, you know, trying to figure out what our number of, is going to be of guys that we bring in versus the number of, you know, versus, all right, do we want to save some room for the transfer portal? Are we going to have room for the transfer portal? Okay, this number of guys is deferring because of COVID. How big is that next class going to be? You know, I think at the end of the day, we're trying to build the best. I know this sounds ridiculous, but we're trying to build the best possible class. So if some years that's 10, some years that's 14, you know, some years it's one face-off guy, some years it's two face-off guys, some years it's five offensive guys, some years it's seven offensive guys. We try and stay nimble and we try and stay flexible with that while also adjusting to, you know, what the recruiting landscape is in that given year.
How does your recruiting process work from, let's say, the start to finish, and how involved are your assistant coaches in the process? And at the end, is it a group decision, or do you make the final decision on who you decide to bring in for recruits?
Yeah, it's a process, right? I mean, I think our most important thing is to try and get as much information about these kids as possible. And I know that's not a unique perspective in terms of what we try and do. And, you know, really what we try and do is we try and, you know, sort of in, you know, I would say like mid-July, mid to late July, that's when we start looking at that next recruiting class. So this past July, that was really the 23s. And really try and, you know, probably get a list of about 100 guys if we can within a month, you know, so sort of by the time we start in September, if we can get 100 guys that we've seen, that we know about, that we like, that we've heard about, you know, and sort of start that and try and rank those guys as best we can on a scale of one to five, you know, five being, you know, the most impressive guys in one being guys that we're going to keep an eye on and that we need more information about. And as we go along, we try and build out that database. You know, in years past, it's probably gotten to 250 or 300 guys that we've seriously looked at. And then spend the fall, try and see them, try and get, you know, usually about 40 to 60 guys on campus over the course of the year, whether that's in the fall, winter, or early summer, less so in the spring, because everybody's busy then. And then just try and figure out whether it's talking with our guys, whether it's going to classes, whether it's being completely transparent about what it's like to play lacrosse here versus other schools. And, you know, between myself and, you know, our players and our assistant coaches, you know, we all have pretty good perspective on what it may be like to play at other places or at different levels, you know, and just try and say, hey, listen, like this is sort of how we compare to those other places. And then really our goal in the process is never to pinch guys. You know, we try and stay away from the exploding offer. We try and stay away from, hey, we love you, but we need to know in the next week. We try and stay away from that. And the main reason for that is, you know, we want these guys to make the decision and know in their gut that this is where they want to be. So if that means they need to visit five other NESCAC schools, if that means they need a month, if that means they need to exhaust the process with, you know, I'll just use, you know, Harvard or Yale or wherever it is, you know, just to make sure that, you know, Coach Byrne or Coach Shea isn't going to call them and be like, hey, actually, we really would love to have you here in Cambridge or New Haven. That's fine with us, you know, because we don't want a guy to say, hey, I want to come to Tufts. I'm committing to Tufts. And then a week later be like, ah, you know, I just wish I had visited this school, or I wish I had, you know, just contacted this coach. You know, that's really what we try to avoid. And so, you know, that those commitments from guys usually, you know, start right around July 1st. But, you know, we committed. We're still, you know, looking for guys in the 22 class.
Coach, we talked about recruiting and commitments and players coming to play for Tufts, the requirements. In terms of your roster size, does that vary from year to year? And if you could just tell a little bit about some of your freshman guys and what you like in some of the guys you have on campus.
Yeah, I think, you know, roster size, you know, we've obviously COVID has ballooned us a little bit. You know, I think we'll probably be around 55 this year. You know, sort of our ideal number is 50. And the reason for that is we play a little bit of a, obviously, you know, as you guys know, and we've talked about, we play a little bit more of an up-tempo style. So we're going to use more guys during a game. We're going to be upwards of, you know, playing 30 guys over the course of the game. You know, the style that we play needs a more up-tempo practice, which means that more guys are practicing. So we require, or excuse me, I shouldn't say require, we prefer to have more guys at our practice. And you know, there's, even when we have 50 healthy guys, people aren't standing around at practice. We're very cognizant of that. You know, and so I would say, if you're playing 30 guys, you're playing, you know, 60% of your roster every game, you're always going to have bumps and bruises. You're always going to have, you know, guys that maybe aren't physically ready yet to participate in a game during those, you know, those critical moments. And so we feel like that's sort of the size that we need to have to be successful on a day-to-day basis and in a game-to-game basis and throughout the course of a season, which can grind and can go up to 23, 24 games. You know, so I think that's kind of where we are with size. And I apologize. What was the second half of your question?
Just tell us a little bit about your freshman class. How's your freshman class looking? I know they're playing now. It's the first time you've been able to see your freshman class play in the fall. So just tell us a little bit about a few of them and how they're doing.
I think they're doing pretty well. You know, I think the biggest adjustment for the guys make when they come here is the speed and the style and sort of the no fear of failure and be real aggressive and be creative and don't worry about making mistakes. And so I think for a lot of these guys that came from really structured programs, that's a welcome reprieve, but also it's challenging to try and, you know, adjust your game like that right out of the gates. You know, again, I think this freshman class, it's interesting because this freshman class, like all these guys had a pretty robust senior year. You know, they played more lacrosse overall than all of our returners did. So in some ways, they are ahead of the curve a little bit than our guys normally would be. Doesn't mean they're better. It just means that they are, I think the transition is a little bit easier than it has been in years past. You know, again, some guys that have stood out so far, you know, on the defensive end, Michael Ayers from St. John's Prep and George Panagopoulos from Deerfield Academy have been really good so far. Done a nice job. And then, you know, Ethan Gatto and, Max Ettinghausen have done a really nice job, you know, playing on the offensive end. You know, we've got two guys playing football, Sam Prezzoli and Lewis Timmons, who, you know, we're excited to get back on the field at some point, you know, in mid-November. But, you know, Parker Merrill's done a nice job at the X. He's a Bullis guy, took a gap year last year. So I think, you know, again, I think all of the guys are doing a really nice job, but, you know, certainly those are, you know, those are a couple guys, you know, that we've been excited about, you know, right out of the gate. Now, granted, they could come out tomorrow and stink and lay an egg, and, you know, that would be a typical freshman move. But, you know, those are a couple guys that I think, you know, over the course of our six practices have consistently done a really, really a nice job so far.
Last question for me, Coach. You lost your offensive coordinator, Coach Murphy, to Michigan. Who do you have in plans to replace him?
Yeah, I think it's the worst kept secret in New England lacrosse right now. You know, that, you know, Steve Moreland's going to join us. You know, Steve, who was the former coach at Gubbs and the former coach at Phillips Andover. You know, obviously you guys know him well. He does a great job running the New England Twisters program. And I've known Steve for, you know, 15 years now, just because our high school coaching paths coincided. And, you know, I think every guy I talked to, and I did, you know, my due diligence with him, I talked to Coach Byrne, I talked to Coach Canella, both of whom know him really well, both from their playing days at UMass together, but also in subsequent years as he's been, you know, really consistent with visiting and asking questions and recruiting and things like that. You know, they're adamant that he's an excellent, excellent coach, and talk to guys who played for him. They love him. You know, you know, again, the way that he's developed his program, you know, whether it's the Twisters or these other, like, he's a great in terms of player development. He's a really, really hungry recruiter. You know, he's certainly different. Normally we have a young guy, you know, in that position, but, you know, again, all things considered, we're very excited about Steve and what he can bring to the program and what he can add and how he can help us evolve as a program. And, you know, his connections are incredible, and the extent of his knowledge is really impressive as well. So we're really excited. And, you know, I think he's done a great job so far, you know, adapting to the college game and the expectations of an assistant coach at this level. And I just think he's going to be better. And by the time we get to February, he's going to be in great shape. I think we're going to be really, you know, grateful that he decided to jump on board with us.
Coach, you didn't call me. His hire might be in question because I spent a year with Steve in Australia in 1986. No, just kidding. But we had a lot of fun in Australia, and I couldn't say anything but he's just a great man and one of the best coaches and people that I've been around. So I'm excited to see what he does at Tufts, and I know he'll be a great addition to your team.
Yeah, for sure. And again, I think there's, you know, your time in Australia is probably a reason why he didn't list you as a reference, you know, but yeah, I agree. I just think he's going to be great for our program and for our guys, for sure. And, you know, again, the cool thing about Steve is that, you know, he wasn't a lacrosse coach his whole life. You know, he had this whole other career and had all these other life experiences, which I think are only going to, you know, serve our program as he tries to educate our guys and help our guys grow as people and as men. So that's another exciting part about this as well.
Last one from me. As everyone knows, Jack is a Springfield alum. Is it true that Tufts once beat Springfield by 20 goals?
It's false. We didn't win by 20 goals.
Okay.
We won by 19. But I'm not, but you know, Jack, I'm not counting, but you know, that it's funny. Like, I have so much respect for Coach Bugbee. And it's when we had originally talked about the game, you know, there were two things. One is that, you know, his late daughter, Lindsay, was obviously a Springfield alum, but she was married to Evan Crosby, who was a Tufts lacrosse alum, class of 2010. And we thought it would be a great opportunity for us to play and celebrate the life and contributions of Lindsay. And we had this phenomenal event in 2020, you know, probably a week before COVID shut everything down. And we ended up raising $1,800 for Every Mother Counts, which was a nonprofit that helps, you know, helps mothers and helps basically, you know, fund research into, you know, the types of things that Lindsay suffered from right before she passed. And so it was this really cool celebration of Lindsay. We felt like we were doing all these great things. We educated our guys on all of the great things that she did. Our guys were able to reconnect with Evan. Our guys were able to connect with Coach Bugbee and his program. And so it was really a special, special event, obviously a very emotional game. You know, I think our guys played really well that game. You know, they were sort of shot out of a rocket for sure. But the strange thing that Coach Bugbee and I talked about is he's been the head coach there now for 40 years, and Springfield and Tufts had never played. And so it was kind of this interesting thing of us really playing for the first time, at least in his tenure. And we're really excited. We're going to go to their place this year. You know, I can't remember the exact date. It might be the 9th of March, but we're going to be playing at Springfield again. And just really excited to hopefully do something again to remember and honor Lindsay. And then also, you know, for me, I love coaching against great coaches selfishly. I think he's got a great program there. Obviously, the alumni base is out of this world. And it's a real honor for me to be able to go to his home field and coach against him.
Coach, it was a great event. I was at the game. It was a rainy night, and I've never seen a team play a first half the way your team played, the execution, the ball movement, I mean, the defense. I mean, you talk about a perfect half. It really was so much fun to watch. And after the game, I ran to my car and got the heck out of there.
For sure. Yeah. The weather wasn't helping.
No, sure. But fun to watch your team.
That was a midweek game, right?
Yes.
So that was right before Amherst, if I remember correctly.
That's correct.
That was the Tuesday before we played Amherst. And then that was the last game of 2020 for you guys.
No, we actually played the following Tuesday against Ithaca.
Oh, that's right. And you already knew that. Right?
Well, we found out at halftime that our season was going to be canceled. So that was another pretty surreal night in a year and a half full of surreal events. But yeah, that was the Amherst game was the second to last game of the year.
Well, speaking of surreal, Coach, it's been amazing to have you on the podcast. Can't wait to watch the Jumbos this spring. Always one of the most fun teams to watch across all divisions. And anyone listening to this, I would definitely recommend checking out a Tufts game, specifically a NESCAC game. I think it's an in-conference game is a lot of fun with Tufts. So thanks for joining us. Really appreciate you coming on the podcast.
Thanks very much,
yeah,
Coach.
Thanks for having me. And, you know, again, I think we've got some pretty good teams on the schedule this year, and we're really excited to continue to work and try and get better this year. So thanks so much for having me. Really appreciate everything you guys do to grow the game and, you know, give love to Division III. We appreciate it.
Appreciate you, Coach. Take care and good luck this year.
Yep.
Thank you.
And that was Casey Zanoffo. What'd you think of that?
Very interesting. It gave us a great perspective on the academic curriculum and how it works in the admissions. It varies from player to player because you don't have to submit your SAT scores. You can admit your SAT scores, but it's based on, you know, your grades, what kind of classes you're taking, AP honor courses, so on and so forth. So I found that very interesting and informative for our listeners.
Yeah, I liked the word he used, rigor.
Yeah.
Like, how rigorous are your studies? And I was just, oh, I mean, man, thinking back to high school, not much. not very rigorous, I'm going to be honest. So, yeah, if you're a high school player listening, you should probably challenge yourself and kind of get those grades up as much as you can if you want to play at a school like Tufts.
Yeah, I think it's very important to take the AP courses and the honor courses. If you're a good student, you take your study seriously, taking those courses, no matter how you do in them, will benefit you in the admissions process, not only at Tufts, but any of the NESCAC schools.
You take AP classes?
No.
No?
No.
Did they have them?
If they did, they didn't make them available to me.
I took the Modern European History AP test and got a 3 out of 5. I think that's good. And in the English one, I got a 4. So I didn't have to take any intro classes in college. So that was great. Take AP classes. They'll make sure you don't have to. I wish I took a math, so I never had to take a math, even though I kind of never took a math anyway because, you know, English majors don't really have to worry about
it. Well, I went to a PE school, so I had to take lacrosse.
Right. That was your class.
That was one of my classes.
Yes. You got a good grade in that,
though. I did. Coach Bugby was the teacher.
It's true. It's a great arrangement to have. But that was an excellent conversation with Coach Zanoffo. Really happy he came on the podcast. And, you know, he's been really great to me as a member of the media throughout his entire tenure there, granting me access and actually invited us out to practice. So we should probably go.
Absolutely. We're going to go.
Absolutely. All right. Well, thanks for listening to New England Lacrosse Journal's Chasing the Goal podcast. For Jack Piattelli, I'm Kyle Devitt. We'll see you next time.
You've been listening to New England Lacrosse Journal's Chasing the Goal podcast. Be sure to subscribe to the podcast on Apple Podcasts, Google Play Music, Spotify, TuneIn, Stitcher, and other podcast platforms. Also, listen to the podcast on the website, laxjournal.com. Be sure to follow us on Twitter at NELaxJournal. Instagram at New England Lacrosse Journal, Lax Journal on Facebook, and our email address, chasingthegoal@laxjournal.com. Join us again next time as we go chasing the goal. Chasing the Goal, a Siemens Media podcast.